This podcast is part of the Gunna Geek Network. The opinions expressed may not represent other podcasts or affiliates of Gunna Geek. Check out more podcasts at GunnaGeek.com and get ready because geekiness starts in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to everything Doctor Who. Join us each week for discussions ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi. I'm your host, Jay Whitten.
Are we talking adult like Torchwood or adult like Cinemax after 11 p.m.?
And with me are Melissa Mazza.
What are scissor grenades? I want one.
And Keir Hansen.
The jockstrap of Rassilon is formidable and large.
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But if we get into anything too serious, don't worry. We'll warn you again. Welcome to episode 66 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we actually spend over three centuries discussing and rambling about a flappy-handed, sliding-shoe, dicky-bow, raggedy man in a television program, but edit it all down to an hour for the rest of you, because after all, time is precious. I'm Jay, and with me in the GPR studios this week are Keir and Melissa. Keir, how's it going?
Very good, sir. Very good. Got a grip on the emotions.
Finally. And Melissa, how are you?
I'm great. I just want to reiterate what I said off the air, that my microphone is screwed up right now, so I apologize for how I sound. The listeners next week will be different, I promise.
The role of handles will be played by Melissa today.
Yeah, so this was a thing. There was a thing that happened the other day, and we all watched, and we had some reactions.
Yes. As one viewer noted, well, that was an hour of colors, shapes, and sounds.
Yeah, so this was one of those episodes that really was... I don't even want to say divisive, because most everyone has the same reaction. It's either, well, that happened and there was some stuff, or they vehemently hated it. Yeah. I don't think that there was anyone that really like wholeheartedly said that this was fantastic and it was a great episode.
Well, it seems like the people that do that did enjoyed it for the aspects that we thought that they would, and that was the emotional side of it, and the send off, the kind of the fact that this acted a bit as a tribute to man for all of his effort and work. But the question becomes, was that at sacrifice of the story? So that's what we get to take apart today.
Yeah. So we've got quite a bit. The biggest thing I've heard from almost everyone on this side of the pond, if you watch this on BBC America, you were done a tremendous disservice with the placing of the commercials.
God, yeah.
It was horrible.
I'm beginning to wonder now that if, since we've got months and months before we have to address something like this again, if there is some sort of a groundswell or a public outcry that, because of the fact that this is BBCA's top show, you know, their viewership of this time around, it is now, as a result of what were the numbers we had on that other doc that said that, or what they came out for as far as viewership on this one in the States. I won't pull the number together in a sec. I'll let you look it up. But basically, this is something where it wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility to treat it like they did with the 50th on the initial broadcast of the 50th and say, the following program will be brought to you commercially uninterrupted as sponsored by so-and-so. Mm. You know, we're only going to have a limited number of these things, come the fall of next year. So why not treat them as what they are, really kind of special events? They can make up their own rules for broadcast. And I'm sure they'd have, for each episode each week, to have one principal advertiser who comes forward and shells out big to have exclusive lock on the show, maybe put their, you know, their bug logo down in the corner or something during the broadcast. But why this was bad. This was really bad.
Well, the numbers on this were there were 2.47 million in the US, which actually topped the 2.4 that the Day of the Doctor got. So more people watched this than they did the 50th anniversary special.
And I think that might have been because of the fact that they, well, captive audience, everybody home at that point, Christmas Day.
Possibly. But yeah, I mean, the problem, though, is that with BBC America, what other show do you really have? You know, you have Doctor Who. This is their flagship show. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got, other than that, you've got Kitchen Nightmares and Top Gear and Star Trek Next Generation, and that's about it.
Orphan Black.
Well, yeah, true. But I mean, when you say BBC America, go and ask anyone that has BBC America, like that specifically got the package that includes this one, and ask them why. And 99% of them are going to say, because I want to watch Doctor Who. Mm-hmm. You know, so to, I mean, this is where they get their money. This is why they do it. So for them to try and find someone to sponsor this one particular show, that's going to take a lot of money, you know, because this is what people want to see.
Mm-hmm. Well, like I said, maybe this is something that enough, if enough people grouse enough, because this is a business decision at this point. This isn't a matter of somebody saying, well, you should reintroduce such and such a character. This isn't a program decision. This is a business decision. So if it in some way could be determined how it would benefit them, if it could even possibly benefit them, I don't know. I don't really know what the numbers involved are for the ad slots that they typically procure. But yeah, based on for the people that had watched the 50th, both on the initial commercially uninterrupted and then the rerun that they did a few hours later with the commercial breaks. I know the people, we talked about this before, the people that had seen, that had only seen the second broadcast with commercial breaks really had a rough time maintaining the emotional flow.
Yeah.
So, and this is just more of the same. In an episode that was entirely about emotion.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, even if we can't get the commercially uninterrupted one, just to have someone there that understands what is going on in the show and places the commercials appropriately would be a win. Because I seriously feel like somebody sat down and they're like, oh, we have to put commercials in this show. Here, do it. What the heck is this crap? All right, fine. Timestamps go here, here, and here. Let's just put it there and there. And, right. Oh, hey, look, there's a big explosion. Let's put it there. No, that was a regeneration. That wasn't an explosion, you complete moron.
Which is just going to lend itself to more people trying to acquire the initial British feed through other means. It's going to happen. If you keep making it this difficult, people are going to seek it elsewhere.
So. Exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, that's the big thing. So let's actually take some time and talk about the episode itself and not everything that kind of went with it.
Yeah, aside from the technical stuff. All right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to volley this up for you guys so that you can kind of chime in on this. This is because I know once I finally got the entire household to be able to watch the episode here, one of the first things that came out of everyone's mouths was that, what we started to discuss right at the top about the story versus the message versus the intent. And, you know, we've got Moffat at the pen here. So when he writes emotion and when he writes character interaction and really, you know, those dialogue moments where they're really kind of laying their souls bare and that sort of thing, that's what he does. He doesn't write battle sequences. He's crap at it. He knows that. He admits that. But this was supposed to be an emotional episode. Did he accomplish what he set out to do? Aside from what, you know, the action events that happened through the episode, did he give this the right amount of emotion?
I don't know. Yeah, I think yes, it was emotional, but it was so emotional to the point that it almost didn't have any story behind it, and so it kind of detracted from it. You know, I mean, there were times where it was like, I can see that you're trying to make me cry here, but I don't understand how we got here. I want to cry, but I don't understand how we got here, and that's distracting me, you know? Mm. So it is very difficult to really say whether or not he accomplished that.
Mm. Melissa, how do you feel about the way the emotional content was able to make it through the script as it was?
I mean, honestly, the commercial, because the only time that I saw, the first that I saw was with the commercial breaks. So I know we said we're talking about the episode itself and not all that went along with it, but that really did have just an impact of not, like, it. I feel like this was definitely more meant to be emotional, and they sacrificed a lot of plot, in my opinion, for the sake of emotion, and then I couldn't even really get the emotions up because I was being interrupted by commercials at all inopportune times. So I think this, maybe it was good, it was, and another thing is, like, they dragged out the regeneration of David Tennant, but when they did that, it was because none of us wanted him to go, and, like, make it as sappy as possible, and, you know, everyone's just hanging on that. I felt like they also really dragged on the regeneration of Matt Smith, but it didn't pack, for me at least, same emotional wallop. So the whole time I was just like, get on with it. Like, I want to see Paul D already. And I love the 11th Doctor. Like, I'm not trying to get rid of him, but like this episode just made me like, come on.
That's definitely something that we need to take apart was the false start or the two-part regeneration that he went through here, because that's a lot of people had some questions about that, about why it happened or how it's justified, or whether it was just a matter of giving him, you know, more of an opportunity outside of the drama that was happening atop the bell tower, so that after all the dust had settled, now he gets to do his official goodbye. Yeah, you know, did that work for you, Jay, or did that seem a little unusual as well?
It was unusual, and it kind of dragged away from both of them. I mean, it See, one thing I realized going into this was I was primed to be upset. I mean, I really was, because I had been talking to my wife about it and trying to explain to her why this was, like, going into this, I was so apprehensive. And that's because when I started watching Doctor Who, Matt Smith was already the Doctor. Like, I started with Eccleston, but I knew that Matt Smith was already the Doctor. So since I've really started watching the show, there has not been a time where Matt Smith wasn't the Doctor. So for all intents and purposes, I'm losing my first Doctor at this point, you know? Yeah. And so, I mean, it was a scary moment for me. And I was like, I know that I'm going to be completely just, you know, flabbergasted here when this happens. And then you get to the point where it's on the, you know, he's on the clock tower and he's, you know, doing his big Matt Smith speech, which I was so happy to see that we got at least one more of those, and then it regenerated. And I was like, okay, I can be okay with that. It wasn't sad. It wasn't anything like that. I was okay with it. And then we see him again. Yeah. And you're like, wait a minute, what the hell is going on here? Yeah. So it took away the punch from the big, the big blast one. And then you have the little drawn out, well, I say drawn out leading up to it anyway. His little speech about, you know, his philosophical, everybody changes and this kind of thing. And it's like, okay, I thought we were done with this part. I had already moved on at that point.
Well, they had even had the pieces of that discussion prior to him even, you know, climbing the stairs, you know, for the final showdown with Dalek Mothership. They could have had all of that sentiment conveyed there and allow the regeneration to be that big, you know, literally the biggest damn regeneration ever.
Yeah.
You had indicated, how did you phrase it? Something about, you know, Nine shows up and...
Yeah, when Nine regenerated, he knocked Rose back a step. When Ten regenerated, he blew up the TARDIS. When 11 regenerated, he took down a damn warship. Like, I'm terrified to see what comes next.
Well, you guys have all been kind of tapping into something which I think is kind of the predominant factor for this. And again, yeah, and I don't want this to be an episode where we just kind of bash on the thing entirely, because there were a lot of elements of this that I was really appreciative to see that Moffat and crew and the individual actors and performances really poured into this to try and give something that maybe didn't tie up loose ends, but at least let us know as viewers that they weren't completely overlooking them. Things along the way in the past couple of series where we've said, well, whatever happened to, well, what about the, but, well, whatever, what's going to be the repercussions of, you know, die? And it looks like they attempted to do a lot of this, but I think the one word that is conveying everything that I'm hearing from you guys in our discussions, from a lot of the folks that have seen it and chimed in, is confusion. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of confusion over this.
Yeah.
And some of it is technical, and some of it is script. The technical stuff, I'm really surprised that I thought it was just me, because I tend to harp on these kind of things. But the moment Will, who we've had on the cast board, chimed in on this, the moment he finished watching, he knew exactly what was going on. He said sound levels were off. The mix, the orchestration in the mix was so loud that there were times when dialogue was lost.
Yeah. And I thought that was just me. There were times where I wanted to turn on the closed captioning just so I could go back and hear it, because that happens sometimes when I watch British shows and you've got somebody talking with their fast English accent and it gets a little bit difficult to understand them at times, especially like with Sherlock. Sherlock, most of the time I have to watch completely with captioning, but yeah, I thought that that's what was going on, but normally that's not the case with Doctor Who. And this time I really did find myself having a hard time making out what they were saying. And the first time I watched it, I really couldn't place why. I think it took Will saying something for me to catch it.
Yeah.
It's actually a common complaint with the BBC on all shows. I remember reading just about a year ago that this was like a thing that they talk about in England. It was in like one of their newspapers. So it's an English thing.
Okay. Interesting. So I guess we need to set our surround sound systems to UK edition in order to play down Murray Gold. Well, that leads us to the other half of this, which was, you know, if we were having a hard time, you know, gathering some of the intricacies of the dialogue, which was coming at us pretty quickly and not always coherently. And so if the music was a bit much, there was also just a matter of, you know, as Smith himself claimed, you know, one of his best techniques was to talk very fast, hope something happens, and take all the credit. Well, talking fast is something that he's always done. It seems like everyone was throwing their dialogue out there to get in everything that they needed to say. Case in point, I still, after seeing this now a couple times, I still do not know what Clara said her name was when she was within the truth field at Christmas.
Yeah, I don't think she said her name. I mean, I could have missed it.
What her response was. Yeah, I'll have to get the iTunes edition with the closed captioning to figure out what it was that she blasted out. Because I couldn't, it was happening throughout the episode. I kept saying, no, okay, I must have missed it. I'm sure they'll come back to it. And they never come back to a lot of points.
Yeah. Well, we got a rather lengthy email from listener Casey. So let's go ahead and go through this. She's got a lot of points that we're going to discuss anyway. So we might as well throw this out here now. So, all right.
Well, we did address, she sort of started out by mentioning the fact that, you know, the confusion factor on the initial watch. And I know that she's had an opportunity. She and I have been close friends for years, and she's gotten a chance to be able to go back and see it again. She also has the advantage of having a classic Whovian in the household, which helps her kind of fill out some of the rough spots when certain things happen. Mm-hmm. But talking about that confusion factor, this was not necessarily an episode where having an information source next to you, or even pausing to look something up, is going to help you. So put that on the mantle.
All right. So she says, I will admit I'm fairly new to the Doctor. My viewing really began in 2005. I've been trying to get caught up on classic Who via Netflix, so my background knowledge is a bit spotty. I also need to do a rewatch of this episode to hopefully clear some things up. But here are my first impressions. All apologies for the lengthy rant. I found the time of the Doctor to be muddy, confusing, and downright poorly written. The plot felt forced and thrown together with few or no cohesive pieces to bind the whole thing together. Overall, I was left with a "did I miss something here" sensation that I chalked up to my sketchy knowledge of Doctor Who. Maybe there was a huge chunk of some classic Who minutiae I was lacking. Okay, I fully admit I missed the Asylum of the Daleks reference when the Dalek eye stalks popped out of everyone's skull, but Keir and my buddy Jonathan set me straight on that. So, I've got to say right here, saying that the episode was muddy, confusing, and downright poorly written, I can understand what you're saying here, but I go back to the end of time and point out that plot and that writing that led to the end of Tennant's run.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is sterling by comparison.
Well, it's always going to be difficult, I think, to try and find a way to as it seems like he was attempting to do, or Moffat was attempting to do, strike some balance between the conveyance of the emotions and the send off for the current actor.
Yeah.
The idea of having this is a Christmas episode, so you've got that theme that always tends to go through these things. It just happens to be one that is also a finale for a regen. So I mean, you're already making it more difficult. And then he decides to throw the extra aspects of pulling in all of these loose threads that have been left along the way, going back through all of Smith's last few years. So the crack in time, missing Gallifrey, the bringing the silence back. Now you've got the papal mainframe, which somehow connect back to the Kavarian sect and the explosion of the TARDIS. And you're trying to do all of this and pack it all into an hour while still tipping the hat to this gentleman who's been wearing the bow tie for 3 years. And lots of luck. It's a Herculean effort, and it's going to leave a lot of people confused and wondering why.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that said, like, they could have, I'm glad that they tied up all the loose threads and everything, but I still feel that this episode could have been trimmed. All the stuff in the beginning, we did not need to see Cybermen and Daleks and Weeping Angels silence, we remember them, you don't have to throw it in our face that this, I feel like those things will never be scary again after this episode, that they were just all thrown in there. I think it was good, you guys have a point that it was, they tied up all these loose ends and, you had to put it all in there, but they still really could have whittled down some of it, especially the beginning, don't you think?
Well, when it really boils down to it, this was another big showdown with the Daleks. So if that's the case, because it always really, at the end of it all, comes down to the Time Lords and the Daleks, then did you need to have, as you said, did you need to have the Cybermen there? The silence, maybe, I'm still kind of scratching my head on that one about having them, paired up with the mainframe and all, but did you need a couple of Centaurans getting blown up in their invisible tank and such? I mean, just the little things that just added another layer of complexity to the story.
Yeah, it all did just get a bit much, but Moffat had come out and said, and he and Smith both wanted this to be a swan song, basically a culmination of everything that the 11th Doctor was, and I think that was a too much of an undertaking for a 1-hour show. you know, you really needed to stretch it out. If you wanted to put all that stuff in, that's fine. But it, yeah, there were points where you didn't understand why it was included. It just felt crammed in there just because it was something else. So
I think muddy is the good word for that.
Yeah, then. Definitely. But, all right. So then she goes on to say, the score was so loud that I had trouble hearing some dialogue and may have contributed to my lack of understanding. I couldn't hear it. I assumed it wasn't pertinent to the plot and therefore just extraneous mumbling. I never could understand Matt Smith's rapid fire delivery of dialogue either. So we talked about that one. Yeah, I think everybody had that problem.
I have to Jim say that too. I like the music itself, though. Going back to that Rings of Akhetan thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the music was fantastic. It was just overwhelming at times.
And at times when we were really trying to pick up on some things that were coming out of some explanations that because obviously the explanations were coming right before a dramatic moment. So, of course, the orchestra swells up.
Mm.
So we've got them getting louder and getting more dramatic at the same time that we're getting information about something really dramatic that's going to happen on screen. And we're trying to get that explanation while, the orchestra is trying to drive the emotion into our skulls. Guys, somebody scale back a second.
And then it goes to commercial and we just say, what the hell? All right. So then she says, and Whiskey Tango Foxtrot handles the Cyberman head. Again, did I miss something? Since when does number 11 have the head of one of his most feared enemies hanging off bits of the TARDIS as a communication aid? The plot device had no point whatsoever for me.
Agreed.
Yeah, I have a big problem with handles.
Okay, I did too at first. Like, I thought it was funny. It was a gimmick. I'm not going to argue that. Handles was Wilson. I mean, that's basically what it boils down to. But when I thought about it in that context, it started giving me a different viewpoint on it. Because what was the purpose of Wilson? It was to
keep
give
him from going crazy.
And to give him someone to react to and to show, that even though he was going where he needed to be, the loss was still something real. And we didn't have that in this episode unless we had handles. Seeing the doctor stay there for centuries and Clara coming back perfectly fine minutes later in her timeline, we didn't understand the scale of what the doctor had sacrificed to stay here and defend this city. When you had handles, someone that had been there for him and he had become a true friend of, when we saw handles leave and you got that emotional, well done mate from the doctor. It conveyed the sense of loss and conveyed the sense of sacrifice that that he went through in order to do this. So it may not have been the best way of going about it, but it was more than just, hey, here's an extra Cyberman thing that we've got laying around. Let's throw it in the episode.
Well, Jay, I agree with everything that you're saying. And for me, though, that's the reason why I don't like handles. Because the Doctor goes through like 300 years that we just don't see that aren't on screen because the episode is long enough. So obviously, handles was like a huge part of not only that 300 years, but it seems that they had a pre-existing relationship before that, and he's very close to him. We don't see any of that. So yeah, I see what you're saying about the Wilson and someone from him to, bounce against and have an emotional connection to because Clara, for plot's sake, was somewhere else. But this is someone who was so close to him, and we don't see that. We're supposed to be seeing his story, and it just doesn't pack the same emotional wall up when it's not someone that we already know. It's someone that apparently became very close to him, and we know nothing about that. It's just annoying.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more on that. That's really what it comes down to, is the fact that if that's what you're using this convention for, is to be able to show the fact that he needs that touchstone that keeps him connected to things, even though he has chosen to literally encapsulate himself for 300 years in defense of this town, especially when he finds out that it is Trenzalore and there's all that baggage behind it. That if we're to feel that to that same depth and have that empathy for him as he goes through this, then doing so with a character, finger quotes here, a character that has just been introduced at the top of the episode and really isn't explained for a while. Like, there's a large chunk of time at the beginning of the episode where he's just, carrying around this talking lunchbox and we don't know why. And then again, explanation comes at you really fast. If you didn't catch the fact that he had gotten it at a Maldivaran market, Fat Blue Man, so forth, and happened to have the whole of the Cybermen collective information banks in there, so he's using it as an info resource. But you just see him like, when the hell did he hook this up to the TARDIS console? Or is this thing now just giving the TARDIS a voice? Because for the first 5 minutes or so, that's literally what I thought was going on, was that he had given a voice modulator to the TARDIS console, and I was pissed.
Yeah, it definitely could have been done a lot better, but I just it was a gimmick. It was something fun to throw in there, and it did have a little bit of thought behind it. So it wasn't the greatest thing in the world, but I feel like people are at least in my opinion, a little overly harsh on it. Yeah. I mean, when everything else that was going on in this episode and you're going to get hung up on handles, it's priorities are kind of screwed.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's part and parcel. So
Yeah.
But step on here because we had lots of things that left a couple people head scratching.
All right. And I really did not understand Clara's parents or Gran. For a heart-stopping moment when Gran was speaking about her long-departed husband, I thought they were going to have an inference that Eleven was Clara's grandfather. I've seen enough Classic Who to understand that conundrum. Thankfully, Steemo had enough sense not to go there or else my cranium would have splattered all over the TV. Maybe, just maybe, again, thanks to Kier for clarifying this, we can explain away the presence of Clara's parents as one of her iterations when she went through the time stream thingy back during The Name of the Doctor. But again, meh, they had no purpose to this episode for me.
All right, well, she said it, Kier, you have to explain.
there was the issue, she's like, well, wait a minute, those weren't her parents. We met her parents, the whole leaf flying in the wind mm-hmm. thing, and that was their parent, and they're dead, and on and on and on. Well, we've got, after the Name of the Doctor, though she doesn't necessarily remember everything that she's been exposed to, she clearly doesn't. There is one iteration left that is continuing to be partnered with the Doctor. All of her other instances that were scattered through his time stream did exactly as they did. They landed at those key points. They were there to help, you know, guide and steer and influence his decisions along the way to keep him safe from the great intelligence. So this one that is left behind is one that necessarily, you know, we had to pick an iteration. So this is the one. And we don't necessarily know her whole story. Okay, this is the English teacher. Got it. Okay, we picked up, she's the English teacher. Have we met her parents, or did we meet parents from another one similar?
Well, the thing that I've caught, I caught the behind the lens thing for this episode, and they actually have the family there interviewing them, and they refer to the guy as Dad, which I don't even think it's the same actor. No. So, however that's done, I don't know. But then the mom was referred to as Linda, so I'm getting a stepmom kind of thing.
Right.
So we don't know how long ago Clara died. I mean, it was like, or Clara's mom died. It was like 8 years ago or something, I think. Plenty of time for him to get remarried. And that would also explain why Clara's very much like, yeah, no, I'm not listening to you right now kind of attitude towards her. So, I mean, at least that can kind of explain how they fit. I don't know if purpose was in there or not, but.
I'm seeing her point about when the dad is talking to Gran and saying, tell us a story about the pigeon. Remember the pigeon? And Gran starts going into one of her wistful moments, thinking of her departed husband and just, you know, seeing that image of him. I get that connection, that little speech, you know, that draws out some emotion from Clara. And I will say, and I'm going to jump up here and say this, and I know I'm not alone, this is one of the episodes that I think has allowed me to finally lock in with Clara, because I now have one Clara, and I get it. I now get it. I'll explain what I'm feeling later. But just as far as the family goes, we had to pick a family, and this week I wasn't as upset about this as Casey's and some other folks were.
It just felt pointless to me. I mean, it really did. It was like, okay, so it's Christmas, so we have to include their family. But like, you look at Christmas Invasion when, you know, the first episode with Tennant, and there was a point to Mickey and Jackie being there. You know, mm-hmm. one, they were already established characters, so we knew them. But two, it was, you know, there was a point for them to be there. This one, it felt like, well, it's Christmas, she's supposed to be with her family, so let's give her family for a little bit. Okay, yeah. We're done, let's move on.
I'm pulling something different out of it, and this is kind of I guess I might as well just throw it out here now. The reason why I think I get Clara now is because I think I understand, and this is something that Will and I have talked about. I know that we've been talking about, you know, actually putting an entire episode together to discuss this, and that's the role of the companion over the course of the show. I think I understand Clara's role now as she's the Doctor's defender. And having her there, sitting at the family Christmas table and just constantly looking at the window or any conversation that's going on at the table is making her think of the Doctor and those things, because she feels she needs to be elsewhere. Her entire being is there because she put herself there to be the Doctor's champion, you know, throwing herself in front of countless bullets for him, you know, and coming up with all of the impossible solutions, even at the points when he didn't have one. Other companions have done that along the way, but that was, they were intermittent. She incorporates that. She embodies that. And this episode, I think, for me, locked that in. So I know, I appreciate her place in all of this far more now, because now I know why she is. all that time in the previous half a series when we were trying to figure out who she was, I couldn't connect with her because I didn't know that. And even when we got the explanation, I was still, okay, I get it. Well, we're going to have to see how this plays out now. Now I've gotten a chance to see how that plays out, and I think I understand.
I think I'm going to have to rewatch it, see it from that angle now, actually.
Yeah, I don't know.
Take the moment when she's clutching to the side of the TARDIS door after going through, and I forget exactly what she says. She says, I saw time, or I saw space.
I was in space.
And, you know, their rekindling of their emotions, they start, you know, hacking at each other, like, oh, I'm even talking to you. And then they have a laugh and they hug. And that's when you start to see the fact that she is going to outrageous lengths and risking herself time and time again, simply to make sure that she's there with him. And he keeps pushing her away, and, you know, saying he's protecting her and by isolating her and so forth. And he doesn't want to see her grow old and die in Christmas, because who wants to die at Christmas?
She's already done that once, didn't she?
Yeah, but she keeps clawing her way back because that's who she is. You know, when he walks up the bell tower steps and doesn't have a plan, and, you know, she's about to leave the room, and she tries in one more desperate effort and has that beautiful, beautiful moment talking to the crack in time, or the crack in the universe. Gorgeous, you know, and it's very subtle. You know, it wasn't this, you know, big, long speech or anything. It was very short dialogue, but totally sold it. Because that's where you see that she has done this all for tremendous love for the Doctor that she's developed, and that's the way that she, you know, she chooses to be the suit of armor. So
yeah, I mean, I completely agree that Clara was fantastic in this episode, and it really did kind of cement her as the companion. I just feel like her family was a poor way of going about showing that. Like, it could have been done more effectively somehow else, instead of throwing in, I mean, it's the same argument with Handles, throwing in these people that we don't know, we have no idea how they fit in, and we're just supposed to understand that there's a relationship there. And so it's just kind of, I don't know. I felt like it could have been done more effectively, but...
Possible. Yeah. I just saw it as something that just has her stuck in a situation where she doesn't want to be. Yeah. She knows that she should be there, but her heart is elsewhere.
Well, I mean, you could do that easily with, like, having her sitting there at the table and having the, you know, just like focusing on Clara looking out the window and having all of the other dialogue just very muted, mumbled, and that kind of
thing. Yeah, just Walla Walla stuff, yeah.
Yeah, very Charlie Brown. But so, all right. So then Casey goes on and says, and the church, what? I can't even.
Right with you on this. The whole papal mainframe thing, Tasha Lem in general.
I mean, Tasha Lem was awesome. Tasha Lem was awesome. I like her. I want to see her return. But yeah, there was no explanation at all.
Well, what I liked about it was that it finally did tie up the thing about Silence being a religious order. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, it brought it full circle. But what I don't understand, this is the papal mainframe. She's some kind of nun. The Silence are some kind of professors. But again, I'm not sure, like, where we are in time. I know that we're on Trenzalore. But, like, is this something that came from humans? Like, I'm still kind of, like, because, you know, you hear papal. I'm assuming that this is, like, a human-begun church, like, which... The last one I saw was with Ian Glenn and the Weeping Angels, and they were like a militant organization. And I'm like, is that like the same church or what? Like, that's what I was concerned about.
Yeah. Well, again, this is what happens when you have an explanation that gets introduced in the episode, and yet it's something that has been claimed that it's been there all along. So we're getting a crash course in the papal mainframe, you know, which this is probably one of the only moments, because it was early on in the episode where things had not gotten so crazy talky fast that you could actually pick up on a lot of these things. But how it connected to, you know, them being the sort of a galactic security firm or, you know, and yet at the same time, it's a space church and so forth, or how they had factions how they're connected to the Headless Monks, Demon's Run, and everything going back. I think in order to really lock this one in more effectively, we probably should have had more direct, a little more of a connection with them earlier.
Yeah, and I think honestly there's enough information here that there could have been a whole episode about it. If it had come in earlier, I would have accepted it much more easily.
Yeah, I don't think we're done with the church yet. I don't think that's something that's going away.
No.
So hopefully,
I just think the viewers might have benefited if we knew a little bit about them before this episode. It would have just smoothed it a little bit. Okay, we're connecting the papal mainframe. Got it. Okay, so yeah, we got this Tasha Lim check.
All right, so let's just plow through the rest of this email real quick. So, again, muddy explanation, no point. Blah blah blah. Lost interest. At one point, I remember thinking, oh whatever, can we just get on to the regeneration? Then drop the bow tie, and bam, there's Peter. I was so stunned, I shouted some very NC-17 words at the screen. When I realized Matt was well and truly gone, I admit I got a bit verklempt and wiped my eyes, but damn, way to ease a girl into a regen. Ouch. Again, to be fair, I may understand more about this upon the second watch, but unlike the Day of the Doctor, I did not love this on first viewing. Absence of Tennant notwithstanding, wink. But first impressions are lasting ones, and this left me feeling disappointed and cheated. I also thought it was a lame send-off for Mr. Smith. He wasn't my favorite Doctor, but he certainly didn't deserve this mess. Keep up the great work, Casey. So, yeah, let's talk about the regeneration.
Which one?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we kind of touched on this earlier, but you know, it was kind of the false start. You know, we had Smith giving his big old speech and, you know, doing the Matt Smith thing that we all love so much, you know, blowing up the Warfleet. And I understand that we wanted to be able to say goodbye to our Doctor, the way that we knew him, and not the Bilbo Baggins version of him. So I can understand why we have the reset on the TARDIS so that we can say goodbye to Matt in his regular form. But if that's going to be the case, then why start with the thing? You know, like, have him use the regeneration power and then see him go back to the TARDIS and kind of change on the way or something. It could have been done a lot better instead of saying, oh, look, there's a regeneration and here's another one. It's like, it hurt. It physically hurt.
Right. Well, when they established in New Who that the regeneration was going to be visualized the way it is, you know, we in the past, you've seen from some of the classic Who regens, a lot of times it was either, sort of cross-fading and you see the features kind of meld around and, or whether it was something where it was far more abrupt, but dramatic, you know, painful or what have you. This was supposed to be, all right, you get the glowy hands, you throw your head back, you know, you go all straw man there for a second, and then you take on your new form and possibly even pass out for a little while because it's taken so much out of you. This regen is not a regen, it's a reset. Note. By the way, I think we all owe ourselves and each other shiny quarters for making the call that the Time Lords were going to bestow the gift upon him. Yep. Thank you. Even though he hasn't saved Gallifrey yet. And by the way, I'm gonna pull the needle off the record for a second here. I like the fact that now there's a reason why we might not want to have Gallifrey return.
Yeah.
I get that now, and I think that's an interesting little piece to play with, because that could make for a really interesting running storyline through Series 8. Do you or don't you?
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of the thought I had, is once I watched this, I'm like, you know, that's a good point, because once they come back, regardless of where they come back, the Time War is going to start over. Unless we get rid of the Daleks ahead of time, it's just going to start things back up. So do we really want that to happen, you know? So,
or does the War Council, because remember we've dealt now with the High Council and we've also had our interesting little fill-in with the War Council now. Is it something where in order to bring them back, there has to be some sort of a political upheaval and the Doctor gets dragged into Gallifreyan politics once again, which we've had in the past, you know, presidencies overthrown and so forth.
Yeah.
Could be interesting.
Yeah, so I mean, it definitely gives us a lot more to think about than just when's he going to find it. So
So back to the regen thing here. We did say, you know, we could have rearranged the dialogue a little bit so that he could have had all of his poignant moments and gotten out a lot of his communication with Clara and say all of the heartfelt things that he wanted to say. You know, his speech is about accepting change and change being, you know, part of the process and never forgetting where you've been or who you've been and so forth. Great stuff. Don't know necessarily that it had to be done there and then after the big glowy blowout. But this brings up one thing that I wanted to kind of get both of your feel on, which was the return of Miss Pond.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Melissa, you go ahead and get yours.
Okay, so I liked it. I actually really liked it. And I know that I might be the only one there. But, I liked it because it was a surprise cameo. We didn't know she was coming. Same way with Asylum of the Daleks when we first saw Clara. Like, it was a really pleasant surprise. And yes, they're both wearing a wig in that scene.
Big.
But, okay, for me, like I said, I was having a hard time keeping up the emotion that I had been expecting to feel and that I was starting to feel at this point. I feel like Moffat pulled a card. He, you know, like, well, if they're not crying yet, this will make them cry. Like, you know, I felt a little manipulated, but it was true. Like, it was at that point that I, like Casey said, got a little verklempt. It was a weird juxtaposition to know that Amy is long dead and Clara, her contemporary, is still there and still with him. I liked it because this was the point at which I started crying. This was the point at which I realized the regeneration is real. And this was also the first time that it felt more like a death, like when Ten left, like, you know, he talks about how he's like dying. And when she says goodnight, it was like, oh my God, like this, you know, this is just another death. Only this time he's an old man kind of going to sleep. And Amy's there to tell him goodnight. So it definitely packed the emotional wall up for me, but I can't get past feeling like I was manipulated into that.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly the problem I have with it, and that it kind of gave me the opposite reaction. Is I was there, I was getting emotional, it was hitting that point, and I kept on, okay, you know, it's coming now any second, and then Amy comes out, and I'm like, really? Freaking really? Like, it was... I mean, I got a very, very Rose feeling from it. It wasn't nearly as bad, but it was that same kind of thing as, you know, as bringing Rose back so that she could be with the doctor again. It was like, I don't know. It definitely, the part that I had a problem with the most was that it completely neutered the effectiveness of building Clara up the whole time. That, you know, she's this awesome companion, and we finally get to the point where we like her and we accept the fact that she's the companion, and we, you know that she likes the doctor. And then you get it to the point where he's dying, and it's like, oh yes, you're awesome, but there's Amy. And it just really negated everything that we had built with Clara throughout this whole episode.
See, I agree, but unlike you guys, I still am not really sold on Clara. Like, I see what everyone's saying, but I'm still just not there emotionally. So for this scene, it did the same thing to me, but it was like, oh, like, see, this girl will never be Amy. Like, this just proves it.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely highlighted the fact that Clara and Eleven didn't really fit. But it did it in such a way that it really took all the power out of the scene for me. So
yeah, well, think back, and again, this may be something that kind of connects to Classic Who. You've got instances where a lot of times in the process of the regeneration, or while it's taking place, especially if it's one that's sort of drawn out, I'm thinking, I think it was actually probably either third into fourth, maybe, where they are sort of haunted by the faces and voices of their previous companions, you know, and that sort of, it runs through their head.
Yeah, example of that is 5 into 6 at the end of Caves of Androzani.
Oh, sure. It literally, it's like a carnival ride going on in his head.
Yeah.
But in this case, he only has one other, you know, cornerstone companion in this iteration. So, but Rory didn't come down the stairs. So, sorry, Rory. One more time getting snubbed. Womp womp. Back to Broadway with you. But it's, I don't know, for a split second when I saw, you know, the second set of boots heading towards the stairs, and especially, I should have picked up on it from the fingernail polish, but when I saw the wedding ring and things, I thought, what, River? For just a second, River? But no, River just got a mention.
Yeah, as soon as I saw the nail polish, it was like, oh, there it is. Yeah, I knew it was coming at that point, but...
I'm okay with it. I am okay with it. But I do absolutely understand your point that it kind of pulls away from some of the real work that had gone into solidifying the relationship with Clara. That is true.
Yeah.
Because of the fact that she obviously, she's like, I'm in the room. She couldn't see what's going on. He's hugging empty space again. So
I'm okay with it. I'm not saying that I hated it, that it was a horrible thing. I just didn't like the effect that it had, the timing that where they placed it. I felt like it could have been done better, and it just it robbed a lot of the power from the scene. But I'm okay with seeing it. I was glad to see Amy return, and, you know, the doctor get to say his goodbye to her properly instead of, you know, her just getting ripped away. So yeah, but
that leads us into the sneeze.
The sneeze. Don't you hate it when you sneeze so hard that you regenerate?
Yeah. So we slam into Capaldi.
This was abrupt. This was so very abrupt. And I was actually talking with our friend Badger Spoon while we were watching this. And at the exact same moment, both of us just sent the message, wow, that was abrupt. Like, that's the reaction everybody had. It was just like way too quick.
Mm-hmm.
But
And again, you know, we change regenerations each time in terms of, and this is an atypical one because of the fact of
it's
because
a reset, of really
what
yeah.
it is, a reset. But the fact that he's been feeling it ebbing under his skin, you know, he began that whole scene saying, you know, I can feel him, you know, it's mm-hmm. like breath in a mirror. You're just waiting for it to, well, one's going to fade and then you can see clearly again. But yeah, I guess I think there was a reason why it was that abrupt. I honestly think so, because I think it was something where it had to be, you know, you have to jolt. Otherwise the emotion gets so heavy, and the scene was just going, and it was just, you know, tugging at you and tugging at you, tugging at you. The only way you were going to be able to break out of it was to say, look over here, you know,
yeah.
cause some kind of distraction for Clara as well, because she was at the point where she didn't really know if she was going to say goodbye, because she thought she had said goodbye once already. You know, we were going through that same journey. Didn't you just explode at the top of the tower and blow this town halfway to hell? And you're looking okay. Yeah. You even got your eyebrows back, as weak as they are. So
yeah, I forgot to say, like, that was a great call at the beginning when he pulls off the wig and she says, "Is that what happened to your eyebrows too?" I laughed delicate. Out loud at that point.
I felt like that was for me.
Sorry.
So, but yeah, and so, all right. Impressions now from the 12 seconds of Capaldi we've had. Granted, he's in the middle of the regeneration throes, so a little disoriented. But in terms of the dialogue, the way that they're starting to allow him to speak and behave, what are you getting?
I'm already in love with him. The delivery, the look on his face when he's sitting there glaring at Clara, like trying to figure out what's going on, was just fantastic. And I mean, the kidneys, I don't like the color.
You always got to throw something bizarre in there.
Yeah.
Something.
The new teeth, the, you know, the long hair, meaning you're a girl, all that stuff. But I think that he is going to be absolutely brilliant, and I cannot wait until we get more of him. This was just so cruel to give us only this brief little bit. I mean, it's literally less than a minute. Mm-hmm. You know, it's harsh giving us just this bit, but I can't wait to see more of him.
I think it's good to see that they're willing to, even from the outset here, give him a little bit of humor, mm-hmm. because that's been a lot of people's concern, is that he was going to come into this, you know, gruff and sour and, you know, barking profanities and all the things they've expected from his previous role, or his most recent role. So the idea that they can allow him to joke a bit, at least at the outset, shows that, you know, that quells some of my concern. Mm-hmm.
I'm definitely getting kind of a third doctor vibe from him, where it's like, yes, he's going to be a serious doctor, but he's also going to have those moments where he makes you laugh. Mm. So he might be more of a humorous version, but that's kind of the feeling that I'm getting is more third doctor.
Okay. I can see that. I was thinking that it might be some sort of a meeting point, at least from what he was delivering here. I definitely pick up on the Pertwee side of it, but I also see little hints of what could potentially be either Tom Baker or Peter Davison in terms of having some quirkiness
yeah.
to it. But maybe more so Davison than Baker. You know, not quite as wild, but using the humor while getting business done.
Yeah, I think that would be a brilliant mix, a third and fourth doctor conglomeration. Just yeah, I think that could be good. Just a slightly toned down version of Baker, but still got all the knowledge and the science and stuff going on. It's like that would be awesome.
Gotcha.
I wish we had seen more of him. That's my only my only complaint with Capaldi in this, is that we didn't get to see him enough. I really, like, this is all speculation, and now we're going to speculate for the next 6 months.
I'm gonna put a potential a hesitant quarter down the table, that as we draw towards the official word on when the show return will be or what have you, we will get, as seems to be the case with BBC being willing to do these things, especially with the way the show is being viewed, or all the ways the show is being viewed, that we'll get some webisodes. We'll get some, not just teasers, but we'll get some little lead-ins that might show the kind of doctor we're about to have. Earlier, you know, 3 years ago, 5 years ago, I would have said they'd never do that, because you don't want to tip your hand and say how the experience is going to be until you get a chance to put a full episode behind it. But I got a feeling that they're gonna take some chances and give us little drop-ins to let us know what kind of doctor to prepare for.
I'd kind of like to see that on one hand. Yeah,
because they can do them as dailies as they're in production for the episodes to come. You know, and it gives the audience, the collective global audience, something to nibble on while we're waiting, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 months.
Yeah. I know. I just had one of my neighbors. I've talked to him a couple times about the show, and he sent me a text yesterday and told me he just watched the Christmas special. He's like, I kind of like this. When does the next one start? And I'm like, August, September, maybe.
Yeah. How does autumn sound? Is this broad? Like, it's autumn.
Yeah.
Well, then let's circle back here and kind of put some kind of a bow on this, like that Christmas bow. we do agree that there have been some muddy elements to the episode.
Yeah.
There were some emotional connections that I think they did a nice job of conveying. And Melissa, you said you're going to give this another go to try to look at it from a Clara perspective one time around and kind of see how that pans. Did we have an episode that was really about sending off Smith, like you said, Jay, the swan song, at cost of a story? Or was it a matter of this was a story that happened to send off a doctor?
No, I think that it really was trying to wrap a story around a goodbye, and it didn't. It worked a lot better than it has at some points, but I really feel like this was, you know, let's say goodbye to the doctor and try and put some kind of plot behind it.
Agreed.
Yeah. I'm hoping though that because of the fact that look at all of the different pages from past stories that Stimo has dropped into this one. Just think about all of the episodes that have been touched on in terms of some of the plot elements that have been mentioned, even in a one rapidly fired line in this 1 hour of television. So he's, as a puppeteer of a showrunner, you know, he's trying to keep saying, look, I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm doing. Look, I referred to, look, I brought that back. Look, you thought I forgot, but I got it. It's in here. And he kept jamming that all in there. It does show that he's trying, but
I just feel like it was too much crammed into too short of space. Like if this had been a 2 hour special or an extended, like a 2-part or 2 hours or something like that, we it would have been a lot better. He would have been able to put more stuff in there to explain it, made it fit a little bit more. I just felt like it was too much, and it just served to nullify most of it.
Yeah.
Well, does that then mean that, do you think that we're going to see the Moff continue to try and treat what he sees as pivotal episodes along series 8 to be similar to this? Is this a pattern that he's falling into? You know, we see it in the 50th, and we're seeing it here, of him saying, you know, when I really want to rattle some heads, and this is going back to some big discussions that are going on across the net right now in general about Moffat's writing, is he making the show too complicated at the expense of viewers' understanding of what's going on? Is who right now too complex or too labyrinthine for viewers than what it was in 06, 07?
I don't know. I think he's got a handle on how to get new viewers, how to bring people in that haven't watched the entirety of the show. I think this was a special occasion just because it was with the 50th anniversary. Obviously, you want to make callbacks to the history of the show. So you're going to have a lot of stuff in there that Nuvians aren't really going to get, which, you know, it's one of those sacrifices you have to make sometimes. With this one, it was a goodbye to the 11th Doctor. And so there was a lot of things that needed to get wrapped up. So I think that these were special occasions that aren't going to be the norm. I think that he has a good enough grasp on what the show is and how it draws people to know that he can't do this all the time, but these were special occasions that it just because they were so close together and because it's all that we've gotten in such a long period of time that it seems like such a prominent thing. But I think in the course of a normal 14 episode run, it's going to be okay.
Okay. So you're sort of saying that what went into like taking this episode in particular, what went into the episode is all, I'm not going to say justified, but capable. It was just executed poorly.
Yeah, I think that he can. I think he can really prove that. Sorry, let me get my thoughts together. I think that he can really write the stories that people want to watch, that can draw people in, that aren't going to be overly done. I don't think that he can. he's going to make it so complex that you need a PhD in Whovianism to understand. But it was just that these are such standalone kind of things. Yeah, I mean, look, how long did we have before the 50th anniversary? And then how long do we have now leading into Series 8? This is all we have to look at. We can't really look at it as a whole with something else. So just because these two are so strange and so out of the norm, it seems like such so much more prominent.
Okay. Well, I think especially with this break, and this is a whole nother discussion as to the repercussions, the ramifications of making an audience wait as long as they do. And is this something that, you know, it's just an American audience that isn't prepared for these kinds of delays, whereas a British audience or a European audience in general may be more accustomed to saying, oh, okay, well, we'll see you next year kind of a thing. But we could go on at length about whether or not giving us 8+ months to mull this over is either going to allow all of the rabid Moffat lynch mobs out there to quiet down, or is it going to incense them and just start screaming that, you know, clearly this guy has too many coal or too many irons in the fire and needs to back off on something because we need to get this material to market. So
we'll have to see.
And I would just like to say, like, going back to what you were saying before, is if this had been some kind of like mystery to solve, and if Moffat was like throwing all these things in there for a reason, and we really did have to go back to like Classic Who and go, you know, like some kind of like fun detective work to try to figure all this out, I could easily pass the 8 months or whatever it's going to be doing that. But my problem is that I feel like it was all in there for nothing, and now we're going to be bored for 8 months dead.
Okay. So saying that the cliffhanger that they gave us wasn't really a cliffhanger?
It's not that there was no cliffhanger. It's more that the only real cliffhanger was, is he going to learn to fly the TARDIS? Oh my God, it doesn't matter because the TARDIS will get them there anyway. Like, so it was more, to me, I'm thinking, this episode was very much Moffat throwing a lot of stuff at the viewer, and I could easily see how some people who are not well-versed in Classic Who, or, you know, just are kind of casual watchers of the show might think that they're missing something. And, you know, that they have to go back and figure all this out. And my point was, there's really, like, that would be great, because we have now many months to fill of, you know, we're obviously going to be discussing this and ad nauseum. But I like when there's, like, a bit of a mystery to solve, and when we have to go back and watch classic episodes to get these references and figure out where it's going, what's going on. But for right now, like, that's not what's happening. We really don't know anything about what Capaldi's doctor is going to be like. And I will be, you know, eating up any little bit of news to find that out. But I kind of wish that the thing that might be scaring some people, that there is so much backstory and stuff, that there was more to go into with that, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. This is, again, it's been a little while since viewers have had the opportunity to have the carryover. You know, when we came into this in 2010 with Smith, it was new TARDIS, new Doctor, new screwdriver, new companion, new everything, you know, and it was very difficult to have something that was going to connect us through. If at least right now, having Clara as our through line, or as our tying thread, if the cliffhanger is not necessarily the you know, how are we going to land this thing, but it may be something where you know, I think it's I can understand them not giving us a potential problem to be solved during this long break, because at this point they may have no idea where they want to go with Series 8. And if they get us all lathered up thinking about the fact that the Rutans or what have you, then that's just something where they're setting expectations that they may decide over the course of production in the next few months to go in a totally different direction, and then they've got to do a lot of hand waving to get themselves out of that, you know, the path they started.
Yeah,
that's true. I don't want them doing that either.
Because as they start working with them, you know, once they have a couple of hours of digital laid out, or once they get a couple scenes fleshed out, or really start to see what kind of chemistry that they have on screen, they might decide to do something entirely different. So I don't want to see yet anything about their kind of relationship. I want that confusion because I like when the companion is a sort of an extension of the viewer, and we're just as, or she's just as lost as we are at times.
Yeah.
But so, well, I think in general, the episode has, the episode is indicative of where a lot of people are concerned about what Moffat has been doing in terms of the way that he's been pacing things out, or whether he is attempting now, because he's been given the opportunity to sort of, you know, get start foaming at the mouth. You take him knowing he is a classic Whovian, dyed in the wool, absolutely is a compendium of knowledge about the long running history of the show. Now that he's been getting some opportunities to be able to play with that and sort of show how much he knows and how much he loves the show by bringing some of these aspects into it and making some of his pivotal episodes, like Day of the Doctor and Time of the Doctor, to be these whirlwinds of all of these things happening. That while impressive, it is something where there's always the concern about being mindful of the fact that you have audience members who may be coming into these things for the first time. You never know which episode is going to be someone's first episode, and so from a marketing perspective, to a certain degree, and I hate to sound like a producer, but you've always got to be mindful that this has to be, you always run a risk with shows that rely too much on where they've been rather than where they're going. Not to say that he's doing that. And as you said, Jay, I mean, absolutely valid point. These are special circumstances on these episodes because of the sheer nature of what they are. But is it something that deserves a gentler hand, so that we don't go through what we had the latter half of Series 7, where there are all these little canned episodes that didn't really have a through line. So any one of those you could probably hand to somebody who hasn't really seen a lot of Who, and you're not going to throw them too hard. But then we get a few that are just requiring not only a good working knowledge, but subtitles and a sound system that can play down the score.
Yeah.
So strike a balance here somewhere, maybe.
Right. Well, we've got plenty of time to discuss this at length. So
you think?
I think it's time for us to go ahead and wrap this one up and start leading into next week. And next week, actually, we're going to take a look at what you just said, Kira, the role of the companion, how it's evolved, how it's changed, and how every different companion we've got has brought something different to it. So we're going to start taking a closer look at that next week.
Mm-hmm. I think we have one listener in particular who who probably wants to bite down hard on this topic, so we might have to reach out. Will, I'm going to be calling you and find out what has to be said, because it's you know, we'll treat it classic and new, you know. Mm-hmm. we're not locking ourselves into 2005 and up, but yeah, if people have things that they want to chime in on this regard, either on the Christmas episode as we've been discussing, or because we've gotten some great feedback along the way for this in preparation for today, but as far as companions go, you know, now that we've, you know, as Melissa's going to be trying to, you know, recap that experience with Clara and see what that really means or what she sort of embodies, but think back, you know, if you've got a sort of a take on what you feel the role of the companion, the convention of having the companion there, or what that relationship, what different relationships with different companions and different doctors has done for the show at time. Was it moving something forward or was it holding something back? Let us know, because this is, we get months and months where we get to just chat now rather than react.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, you can definitely send your feedback to us, any number of ways. Send us email, feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. Find us on Twitter, which is a very popular way for people doing it recently, at Gallifrey Radio. We're on Facebook. You can leave iTunes comments. Call and leave us voicemails at 210-802-1477. We love putting those in the show. And you can also go and leave comments on the episode at gallifreypublicradio.com/66. Until next week, this is Jay saying, I will always remember when the doctor was me.
And this is Melissa being interrupted by an inopportune commercial break.
and this is Kira saying, you know, as always, I'm going to talk real fast, hope something good happens, and take all the credit.
We'll see you guys next week.
Bonzi.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows by calling 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1477 to leave us a voicemail. You can head to GallifreyPublicRadio.com to leave comments on each episode. There you can also keep up to date on all the latest news and gossip, as well as what's going on in the community. Also, make sure to head over to GunnaGeek.com to find out lots of other high-quality, geek-centric shows. Music by Beyond the Epilogue and Retcon Addict.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2013.